Welcome to the Cherry Leaf Podcast. In this episode, we'll ask, if not ditto, then what? We'll start this episode by looking at what is ditto, and then move on to why you might want to use it, some of the reasons why you wouldn't want to use it, and the counter-arguments against that. And then we'll look at what alternatives you might want to consider if you don't want to go the ditto path. So let's start off by asking the question, what is ditto? And in one of the earlier episodes in the Cherry Leaf podcast, we interviewed Tony Self of Hyperwrite in Australia. And Tony described what ditto is and the benefits. So some of this is going over some of the ground we covered in that particular episode. It's still worth going back and having a listen to what Tony had to say. Ditto is a XML standard. It's an architecture. It's a way of writing content mostly around technical documentation, but can also be for other situations such as training content as well. And it's a way of writing your content so it's marked up semantically and written in a way that the content can be reused across different types of media, so mobile and paper and online, so it can be reused, or parts of it can be reused across different documents, as there might be a piece of content that's used in a getting started guide and the same piece of content that's used in a full reference guide. It's an international standard. There's a published standard and it's vendor independent, so you can use a range of different tools to create your content and to publish content. And it's been around as an official standard for about 10 years now. And it's used by companies like IBM and SAP and some of the larger software companies, IT companies around the world. Why have companies in the first place decided to use ditto, this standard? I think a good starting point is to look at some of the problems that organizations sometimes have to face when it comes to writing, creating, and publishing content. Particularly with large companies, and again, if we look at the size of a company like IBM with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pages, there can be some real difficulties in creating content. For example, if you're working in an international environment, you may want to take your content and translate it into the languages of the countries in which you sell it, into Germany, into France, into Japan, into China. One of the issues with getting your content translated is it can cost a lot of money because you can be charged X pounds or X dollars per thousand words. There can be issues over the time it takes to translate it. You finish a document, you send it to translators, you then have to wait for the translator to translate the content, and then you can go to market and sell in that particular country. With traditional systems, if you've got the same content repeated across different documents, then what you can end up doing is paying essentially for the same content in different documents to be translated time and time again. You can end up with waste of money and time. To an extent, this can be mitigated by translators using tools like translation memory to identify where content is exactly the same. But what ditto can do is enforce exactly 100% identical topics dropped into different documents and reused in different places. Another challenge that can happen with larger teams is consistency, in that you have a team of authors and you might end up with different writers organizing information in different styles. You might have some that write their content using headings 1 to 3, others writing content that's headings 1, 2, 3, and 4. You might have some that use lead-in sentences before they write a set of steps, or they have a particular numbering scheme, and other writers that don't. Now, within an organization, it's possible to set standards and to use training to mitigate some of that from happening. But there may be situations where you're getting content from third parties. If you take an example like oil rig, and you need to provide documentation to prove that the oil rig is safe, you might need information from the people that supplied the kitchen and the ovens on how that works. You might get content that comes from the heating ventilation people. You might get information from the fire safety people and all of their documentation that you need to bring in to prove, to have a single source, to prove your oil rig is safe. If you're having those vendors presenting that information in their own style, you've then got a mishmash of different looks and feels. You've got problems over different hierarchies of styles, where they've gone from, again, headings 1 to 3 or headings 1 to 4, and trying to then go through a process of tidying it up to make it consistent. A similar situation might be that you're IKEA and you need to prove that all the materials that go into an IKEA kitchen are sustainable, that the wood has come from the right type of forest, that there's not too much formaldehyde or the amount of glue that's used. And you want all of that information from all the providers that help make an IKEA kitchen. Now, where the structured information, like how many grams of glue that's used in a kitchen, you can give them a form to fill in or a spreadsheet. But it's trickier with unstructured data information, like how you make sure you manage any errors or defects in the system, how that can be done in a consistent way without forcing them to only use plain text. So what DITA offers is a standard way of interchanging content. It gives you a way of reusing content so you can write it in one place and drop it into another document. So the idea with DITA is that you write individual self-contained topics of information, and there are standard ways of laying out things like reference information, tasks, concepts, and so on. Training material is some specific information types or standards for those, and that can make the interchange of information easier because they're standardized in that way. And then what you do when you want to build a document, be it a paper document or an online document, is you have like a pick list, a bit like a table of contents. And again, if we go back to the example of, say, the IKEA kitchen, you might say, I want a cupboard that goes above the sink. I want a cupboard next to the oven. I might even want an oven of a certain size. And because everything is a standard, consistent module, you can take different items, put them together, and build your kitchen to the way that you want it. In the same way with DITA, you can pick different topics that you want in your document or your online system, list them in the map and in the hierarchy and the order that they want them, and then you can publish it in that way. Because it's a semantic-based language, you can do things like mark up bits of text for different audiences, so that when it comes to filtering, you can filter it to only people in a certain region or only a certain type of users. Or you can filter, if you've got different versions of a product, to the professional version or the cut down light version or the free version. And you can have variables. So if the product name, if we're talking about something like pharmaceuticals, we're talking about a cream, the brand name in the US might be different from the brand name in the UK or in Canada. And that can be defined as a variable. And then when you go to publish, you can say, okay, I'm publishing for the UK. The brand name in the UK is this. And then when it publishes, it slots in that brand name into where all of the points where that variable is listed, and it then writes it. So you don't need to have 3 different manuals. So let's look at why we wouldn't want to use DITA. And as I said, DITA's been around since 2006, about 2007. It's been around for about 10 years. Or it's now used by probably about 9% of the technical authors around the world. DITA hasn't yet taken over the technical communication world. After 10 years, will it grow rapidly from that? So DITA is a complex solution to solve complex problems. And for a lot of people, their situation may be that they don't have a complex problem they need to solve. They may be a team of 5 authors or fewer. And in that situation, with that size of company, that size of a team, it may be practical just to create templates, to provide style guides, to do training, to have an editor, and achieve the consistency that you want. It may be that for all the time and effort in setting up Ditta, it's just not going to be possible to get the value from what you want. It may be your content's written for an application that's only going to be around for 2 years, and then the documentation will be retired, will be archived. With localization, now with translation memory, it's possible for a lot of the content where it is reused and is the same within a document to spot those situations, and then for the translators to reuse content that's been translated in the past and reapply it without you being charged a great deal for that exercise. And the common criticisms of Ditta are that it's costly, the platforms for managing all that content can result in you spending five-figure sums to develop your publishing system. If you want to change the outputs, the publishing side of things, to tweak a PDF, the way in which you do that is you're changing the transformation style sheets that are used to generate PDFs or web pages. And these can be very complex, and you can end up having to use specialist consultants to make minor changes to your output. A lot of the publishing tools are based on open source applications, and they're not necessarily fast. So the time it takes you from the moment you push the button to publish and the time in which your PDF or your web pages are ready can be quite lengthy. So as a result, you could argue that Ditta can direct you towards having an efficient way to create dull content, that it can be hard to take your content and present it in interesting ways, nimbly, quickly, cheaply. Ditta, for all that complexity, means that when you're writing your content using tagging. You're marking up the content to say that this piece of text is for this product or for this type of user. And for people that aren't familiar with Ditta, that can be daunting. It can make it very hard for people that haven't been trained in Ditta to make any changes or to create any content. And that can mean that there's a bottleneck. Only certain people who have those specialist skills can create the content. And of course, content isn't only used in technical documentation. There's marketing content and web content as well. People in marketing in particular tend to see the presentation layer and the content as one and the same. They think visually, and they use tools like InDesign to create posters, to create glossy brochures, and people use content management systems for publishing content to the web. And although these are also often based on XML as well, or semantic markup, it can be tricky to get your content from Ditta into those applications. There are criticisms from people like Mark Baker, and again, we have done an interview with Mark Baker in the earlier days, and we'll put a link to that also in the show notes, who argue that the information model for Ditta isn't right, isn't as good as it should be. The idea of Ditta was to create a model that was consistent with the ideas of minimalism. This was some research that was done by John Carroll in the 1990s on how people want information when they get stuck, the best way it should be presented, what should be in there, what shouldn't be in there. Often with that type of information, there is, in addition to those concepts or types of information such as concept and task and reference, are some others. A common one that John Carroll identified was people want troubleshooting information. Another one that comes up often in internal documentation is process information, information that tells you what to do from beginning to end. And out of the box at the beginning, Ditta didn't have those. With a later version of Ditta, they've added troubleshooting as one of the information types. There is a standard now, a standard way of laying out a troubleshooting topic within Ditta that people can carry out. Another problem with Ditta is that you're writing small, self-contained topics. And often, when it comes to publishing the content online, those individual topics will be published as standalone, tiny topics. So you might have a two-step process on how to do something, And the web page will just be those two steps. There won't be any information on why and when you might use it on that particular page. It assumes that you have navigated to that page from a previous page, or that you would go back if you wanted to know that information. And the argument from people like Mark Baker is that people don't work that way. They go to Google, they search, and they land on a page. And they may not have read anything else before that moment in time. Now, with DITA, it is possible, with that idea of maps, to build up web pages that have on it a topic that gives you the context of when and where you might want to use it, as well as the information on how to do something. But often, the way in which DITA is applied, people don't do that. They just push the button and you get these tiny topics, these little atomized topics published on pages. Another issue is that often we're not starting from a clean sheet. We have all of our existing content to deal with as well. And so there's the challenge of how do you bring in your existing content, which is often unstructured, into a structured environment such as DITA. And that can result in a large exercise in having to rewrite, edit, restructure your old content, your legacy content, so that it's in this DITA format. And there may not just be the justification, any real benefits by spending all that time and effort in doing that. Or what people do is they put all their information into something called the general topic, which is just a generic catch-all topic, and sort of fudge it in that way. So it's not really laid out properly in the DITA format. So if you raise these questions with the advocates of DITA, one of the things that they will say is that these problems can be overcome, that it's possible to adapt and change DITA so that it can be changed and made right for each organisation. So for example, with the issue over the complexity, that it's daunting and complex to write in, there have been moves to make it easier to author in those tools. There are tools like FrameMaker Lite, which provide a cut down, simplified view of DITA and all the tags and make it easier to write. In fact, you can give your writers or your non-specialist writers the equivalent of a form to fill in. They fill in the blanks in certain situations. There are web-based tools like EasyDITA that provide an easy web-based authoring environment. There are tools like Fluid Topics, which provide a cut down, simplified view for non-specialist writers. And DITA itself, the Standards Committee has been working on a simplified version called Lightweight DITA, where people can write with less complexity and it will then be able to be imported into the full version of DITA. And also they've been working on solutions whereby people can write in lightweight languages like Markdown or ASCII doc, and that there's a migration path to convert those to be DITA. So if not DITA, then what? So in this section, we'll look at some of the tools and options and approaches, alternative approaches to DITA that you can use. And these are some of the tools that we have used on projects for our clients. We can start off with the word processors, Word and Google Docs. Word today is XML, but in many ways it's not XML. It has an XML standard. Arguably it's a published open standard, but it's not quite the same as the XML that you get with a DITA system. The approach for Word, and really also with Google Docs, is that what you see is what you get. The look and feel and the content are combined together, and there isn't really the capability of using semantic markup for tagging information for different types of users or for different products, so it could be filtered in and out where required. One of the common problems with Word is that you will define how certain headings are used, and you share that document with somebody else, and they add different styles or they amend different styles. So it is possible with the Windows desktop version of Word to lock down the styles so that somebody can't go into a document and amend it. But it's not used or not particularly well known at this stage. One of the advantages of using tools like Word and Google Docs is that pretty much everyone has access to the software you need to make extra content, to edit, to amend it. And particularly with Google Docs, it's very good at collaborative authoring, where people can author different sections in a document at the same time. You can add comments, you can see who's changed what, and track changes in that way. But with the word approach, the word processor approach, one of the things that you're doing is you're managing documents rather than topics. Your level of granularity, your minimum size of document, is typically the file, the document itself. It's not really designed to have the concept of different components which are used to build up documents, to have fragments, to build up web pages. And we hope to do an interview with somebody who specialises in that document approach, that word processor approach, in the future. Another approach to go is to use a proprietary help authoring tool. Again, many of these days are also XML based, and they have the capabilities that enable you to mark up content by different types of users, by different types of products, to have variable text. Then that's a very popular way to go. The products are typically more affordable than DITA based publishing solutions. They enable you to publish content on paper, online, on tablets. You can often convert the information to be apps. There's often tools which integrate with localization products. For example, in the MadCap environment, they have translation management tools as well as the help authoring tools. There's a large community of users. You can share ideas. Good capabilities of bringing in code samples, which can be tricky to do with DITA, and having nice professional looking PDF output without necessarily the heartache of going through some of the transformation processing tools that you get with DITA. And DITA isn't the only XML schema that is focused on documentation. In Germany, for example, they had the issues of localizing content for many years, and a lot of the providers of software solutions for authoring and creating content for manufacturing products, for hardware, developed their own XML schemas. Now, one of the downsides of that is that these schemas tend to be specific to a certain vendor. Again, a bit like it can be with the proprietary help authoring tools. However, there have been moves within the German technical writing sector to develop some standardized approaches to the way in which they've developed their XML schemas. So there can be some, it can be easier to share content across different platforms, migrate from one system to the next. If you're in an environment where you are documenting hardware, or if there are particular capabilities or functionality in some of the software tools from these German vendors, then that may be worth looking at. One of the popular approaches within the developer community is to use lightweight markup languages such as Markdown. For these, you just need a text editor and you can start writing. If you want to do heading ones or heading twos, it's by a hash symbol and then your word for heading one, two hash symbols, and then your heading for heading two. And there are a lot of tools that have been developed by developers to make the processing and management of that content better. And you can convert that content into PDFs, into web pages. It's got capabilities for displaying code samples. However, its approach is deliberately to reduce the amount of functions and capabilities within the tool. As with the proprietary help authoring tools and with the word processors, you can still have the issue of one person going with headings 1 to 3 and another contributor going to headings 1 to 4. However, for basic content that you need to create quickly and where you need contributions from developers, non-technical authors, then certainly lightweight authoring environments are well worth looking at. And if you have limited budget, certainly they're worth looking at as well. Another solution is based around wiki-like tools, tools like Confluence and MindTouch, where you author within a browser environment. Now, Confluence is being positioned less as a tool for technical authoring and more for collaboration. And it is a proprietary tool, so there are some challenges if you need to get that content from Confluence to another authoring environment. And it has some limited capabilities for variables and for conditional text, for filtering content, but as a very easy to use environment for people to add and edit content, to track changes over time, over the history of a particular topic, then it's well worth looking at. And again, typically what you see is what you get. Another approach to look out for in the future is some of the ideas that Mark Baker has been developing, based around XML and semantic content, but more focused on an older documentation standard, something called DocBook. DocBook was around before Ditter, has many of the capabilities of Ditter, but was focused primarily on paper-based documentation. What some people have been doing is looking to see if DocBook can be extended so that you do have the capability for online content and keep the benefits that DocBook has in giving you a lot of power, but without necessarily the complexity that you have to face with Ditter. And Mark's approach and recommendations is to look to build templates and forms where non-professional writers can have a structured way in which they can contribute content. And again, if you listen back to the interview we did with Mark Baker, you can hear more details on his ideas around that. There's one more approach which I think we'll see grow into the future, and that's a combination of a lightweight authoring environment with the capability of having semantic markup with it, and it based on that DocBook XML standard. And that is something called AsciiDoc and the tool for publishing content called AsciiDoctor. And what you can do with that is use a plain text editor in the same way that you can for Markdown, and you can add information to say this is for version 1 and this is for version 2, this piece of text, or this information is for beginners, this is for advanced users, this is for the UK market, this is for the US market. You can have fragments of text in separate files and bring them in to your document. You can have the equivalent of document maps, where you can select which topics you want included in the document and then generate and build that. And this is the approach that companies like O'Reilly Books have been using for the way in which they get different authors to write the content that goes into the books that they publish. So in terms of looking at tools and options for the future, that may also be one tool to look at, particularly again if you're having to get contributions from other people outside of the technical publications team. So that's a brief look at Ditter, its strengths and its weaknesses, and some of the different approaches we can take instead of going down that Ditter route. For more information on some of the tools and previous podcasts that we've talked about, do look at the show notes on cherryleaf.podbean.com. And if you've got any comments or questions, do email us info@cherryleaf.com.